Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Paris now for day four of the Olympics. It's another action-packed schedule for our Irish athletes. RTE Sports, Damian O'Mara joins us now from Paris. We will come to all of the activity in the boxing, the swimming, the badminton and more, Damian. But let's start with Mona McSharry, the first Irish medal of the Olympic Games. It was such a close race. She was so close to the silver, she pulled off the bronze. An extraordinary race, even as we discussed earlier with Andrew, with water in the goggles.
Yeah, it was remarkable, wasn't it? The drama of being there, you know, to be lucky enough to be there last night and to watch it, and literally you could have thrown a blanket over the first five home. When they were coming down the final stretch, and to look at the big screen for a vantage point to try and get that indication as who was leading, who was second, who was third, and the graphic that they used to indicate the timings and the placings and just how frequently it changed in what felt like the, you know, the last couple of metres of the race. Like we touched upon yesterday, I think the quality of the field that was there, the world record holder, the world number one, the Olympic record holder, and the fact that Mona had gone into with second fastest qualifier, but there's always that unknown about how close she is at to potential compared to what others may have in their locker. But for her to just so agonisingly miss out on a silver by 0.05 of a second, but then to beat the fourth and fifth place American Lily King is the world record holder by just 0.01 of a second. Like the margins that are at stake between what is perceived to be success and what is perceived potentially to be failure is just so slim, and it was a great night.
Extraordinary. And she's back at it again tomorrow in the 200 metre breaststroke. Do you think she's a medal prospect? What's her strengths in this swim?
I think this the 100 is the one that people would have given her greater hope in. But the big issue for her tomorrow is that there's now no pressure whatsoever. There's no pressure of expectation. There's no pressure to perform. And she probably has a great ease of expectation going into it. She's not the type of individual who's going to be, well, she's in competition, so she's limited in what she can do. I don't think she's going to have got overly carried away by what happened last night. To speak to her in the mix zone afterwards, she was... it really hadn't hit her, the magnitude of what she had achieved. And I think if she can kind of stay in that bubble, she will stay somewhat focused on the race tomorrow. And, you know, what a great sensation to be able to go into with your medal in your back pocket and just the ease of being able to compete. So I think she could surprise a few people tomorrow.
And someone not shy about his potential medal prospects is Daniel Whiffen. Like, he has been very open and honest. He is going for it. He wants to come home with medals. He's in the men's 800 metre freestyle final tonight. He had his heat time yesterday. It was amazing. Fastest of the eight finalists. He's in with a really good chance of a medal tonight.
Yeah, fastest of the eight finalists, but still some considerable bit off the times he has clocked in the past. And, you know, we were looking at the race and you go to the various split points and it was tight enough. And then literally for the latter stages of it, he just let off the handbrake and off he went. Again, you talk about the different way athletes articulate privately and publicly their goals and their aims for these games. He is of the ilk, and there's many people like him who say, I am coming to Paris to collect the medal that I know I'm going to win, rather than I'm coming to Paris in hope of winning a medal. So he will be the favourite for gold. I think there's a fairly decent expectation. I'm not going to win any awards for swimming punditry to suggest that by the close of business tonight, as we're heading off to our beds in the early hours of the morning, that Ireland will have two medals on the board, because he has just dominated this event in recent times. And, you know, it's very interesting to look at the international previews of these events. Obviously, we're very Irish-centric and Irish-focused, but when you look further afield at those who come dispassionately at the previews, he is the person who's got the target on his head.
A wonderful prospect to think we could have the second medal tonight. And last night, such a commanding performance as well. Like, you talk about dominating there, but like in badminton last night, Nat Nguyen, like, he continued a great run. He's two wins now under his belt in the qualifying group. He made short work of Nepal's Prince Dahal last night, but he has a different prospect tomorrow, this that's going to be a big challenge, isn't it, in the morning?
Yeah, and again, it comes down to, and we had it with our boxers last week, you kind of agonise over the draw, and irrespective of where you're at in the world, the draw will determine an awful lot about where it is you're going to go. So Nat, in his opening match, faced an Israeli opponent who was 15 places below him in the world records, a four-time Olympian. I think there's 13 years between them, if not slightly more in the age brackets, but he got through that in an epic game. Prince Dahal of Nepal would be considerably below Nat in the world ranking, so he was quite confident himself from speaking to him after his opening game that he would go 2 from 2. The challenge he has now is he's got the world number 2 and the reigning Olympic champion Victor Axelsen to come. So Axelsen is the second seed in this competition. Nat is probably of the non-first seeds, if you take away the top bracket of seeds, Nat is probably the second seed that most of the top seeds would not want it to have had. The misfortune for Nat is he's got Victor Axelsen in his tracks now. There's only one of the four in the pool will advance, so Nat needs to basically pull off the performance of his life to defeat Axelsen and basically take him out of that pool.
Well, as I say, you have to beat the best somewhere along your march, hopefully towards a semi-final and final for Nat. Meanwhile, in the rowing, I think we've sent our biggest ever Irish rowing team, and we've obviously had huge successes through the years with the men's and women's teams, whether it's been in the pairs or the quartets. Let's start with Philip Doyle and Dara Lynch. They were out on the water this morning. They're through to the men's double sculls semi-finals.
Yeah, they went in the second of the two semi-finals and they won it with relative ease, 6-13-14. They're the fastest qualifier into the final. Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy, by virtue of the fact that they're gold medal holders from Tokyo, obviously garner an awful lot of focus and garner a lot of attention, and that's before Paul O'Donovan does his interviews, which get everyone talking about what it is he's saying on the bank rather than what he's doing in the water itself. But Philip Doyle and Dara Lynch have kind of come into this relatively quietly in terms of, you know, they're not the Irish crew upon whom a lot of the focus is falling. They were very, very impressive this morning. Again, fastest qualifier into the final, and they will represent a very, very strong medal hope. With a sixth place finish for Zoe Hyde and Alison Bergen in the semi-finals of the women's double sculls, so they advanced to the B final. And we've also, a short time ago, just before coming on air, had the repechage of the women's four. Fourth place finish for Emily Hegarty, Natalie Long, Emer Lam and Imogen Magner, so they go to the B final as well. But Philip Doyle and Dara Lynch certainly up and running with a bit of style and one to watch in the coming days.
And there you mentioned the Irish quartet, Emily, Natalie, Emer and Imogen. Two of them, if I'm remembering correctly, were the bronze medalists last time around, but you've got two new women in the boat. Was that a good performance by their standards that they have set themselves?
Yeah, I think they'll be disappointed not to be in the A final, such as the competitive nature that exists. But like, it's fascinating the depth of talent that has developed in Irish rowing, that you would have, you know, the Coxless Fours that won the medal the last time round as a really, really strong team, and that, you know, you kind of come with the expectation that that's going to be the team for quite some time. Even draw the parallel with Fintan McCarthy and Paul O'Donovan, where Gary was the one that was in the boat. Gary O'Donovan in the boat with his brother Paul in Rio, and Fintan comes along on merit and dislodges him, and he's the partnership. So new pairings, new partnerships. A lot of them haven't done an awful lot of racing this year. Like Paul and Fintan the other day, it was only their second competitive race of the year. So, you know, it's difficult. And again, you know, you come back to the cliche time and time again that you have to peak on one day, or you have to peak for 1 6.5 minute period on one day every 4 years. So it's so competitive. But again, I think that four will be probably disappointed to be in a B final and not an A final.
Next to boxing, and Jennifer Lahan, who I recall, I think, is a teacher and only recently took career break to go full time with boxing. She is about to make her Olympic debut, I think, against China. What are her prospects, Damien?
It's a difficult draw. This is in the women's 54K, the preliminary rounds. She's drawn against Yung Chang of China. Now, Chang is the 8th seed in the competition and would be, you know, a vastly experienced boxer. She finished 5th in the 51 kilo category in Tokyo 3 years ago, so she's got Olympic expertise behind her. But I don't think we can discount the pep in the step that will be around the boxing camp by virtue of Jack Marley and Kelly getting wins over the course of the last couple of days. You mentioned it there, like Jenny only took up boxing in her early 20s. She's a school teacher. I think she's based out around Ashburn and basically has put her life on hold in order to be able to peak for this week. So she's going in against one of the seeded boxers, but one of the lower seeded boxers. And like the boxing competition has been so difficult to predict over the course of the last couple of days. And, you know, I know boxers will talk about one punch at a time, but it's really that opening round has dictated so many times over the course of the fights that we've watched where it is you're going to go. So we wish her well, when she's in the ring shortly.
Has there been an unusual number of split decisions? Like it seemed like Kelly Harrington got a unanimous decision yesterday, an amazing fight. But for a lot of other Irish boxers, it seems to be a lot of split decisions. Is that fair?
See, the problem is all of these things are subjective. And you look at, like there's been... I spoke to Eric Donovan about this on Morning Ireland during the week, and we talked about that there's been a little bit of controversy with one of the British boxers beaten over the weekend, and people, you know, who would know more about boxing than I would know were looking at it and couldn't fathom how she'd been beaten. Eric seems to think that the judging has been pretty much on a mark. There's a couple of things are at play here. It's subjective. You're scoring for punches landed, so vantage points on occasion can be an issue. I there certainly doesn't appear to be any kind of a strong debate around a lack of unanimous decisions compared to split decisions. But one or two countries slightly unhappy with the nature of the judging. And you've also, like there was one case over the weekend where I think it was a Russian-born boxer was representing another country, but there was a Russian judge on the panel, and people are kind of questioning the legitimacy of that, or whether it's fair to put a judge in that position where perhaps you could have your decisions questioned afterwards to see is there a bit of, you know, conscious or unconscious bias. You know, patriotic bias in it. But listen, the boxing, so many of us find it difficult to watch it, to judge it as it goes along, because, you know, the judges are looking for things that are different from what is you and I might be looking for. But I don't think there's been any massive controversy around any of the results.
So far, so good. Back to the water, Damien. The men's triathlon had to be postponed this morning because of concerns over the water quality in the River Seine. What can you tell us about that? Are they hoping to rerun the event later today, or when is it rescheduled for?
The plan, so the men's was to be today, the women's is to be tomorrow. They've now planned to put the men's on after the women's. So the women will start at 8 o'clock and the men are going to start after 11 o'clock. This is one of these stories which has transcended sport over here, because in situations like this, and it's the case with every Olympics you attend, there is such a focus on the spending of money and the spending of public money at the cost of what people think public money would be better diverted towards. 1.4 billion euro has been paid towards a wastewater and filtration system for the Seine. Now, as a legacy project, they want the Seine to return to being swimmable. So they've talked about having the marathon swimming event there, the triathlon swimming event there. The water has been tested. The bit that I find odd about this is that there was a meeting at 3 o'clock this morning, French time, and the decision was only made at that stage to pull the event this morning. So if you can imagine, if you're a triathlete, presumably you are well into your bed at 3 o'clock in the morning. And for an event that was to start at 8 o'clock, you're probably getting up at maybe 4:30 or 5 o'clock, and your schedule is timed to the minute, and you wake up to find, well, actually, sorry, guys, we're going to knock it back 24 hours. So the plan is to run the women's race tomorrow, run the men's race after it, and then they're talking about Friday potentially being the standby date should they not be able to go ahead tomorrow. The water test was fine last week. If you watch the opening ceremony, you'll be aware that we had very, very bad weather Friday into Saturday, and they say that that has contributed to the E. coli presence in the water increasing. But if they don't manage to pull this off, it is going to be somewhat of a public scandal based on like 1.4 billion euro of investment to try and make it work, and to make it work in time for the Olympic Games.
Heavy rains on Friday. What's it like now? Because we know our athletes were really preparing for hotter temperatures. Is it set to get even warmer there now?
Yeah, so we've actually had the Meteorological Service in France have issued weather warnings for different parts of the country. So there's a yellow warning for Paris. They're expecting temperatures of the mid-30s today and tomorrow. The humidity is very, very strong as well, as you would imagine. But they're talking about like Bordeaux and other parts or places around the country where they're hosting some of the soccer internationals, that they could hit 40 degrees in the coming days. Now, again, you look at the support systems that exist for the athletes, and they've got the best of sports scientists and everything else. There was a debate well in advance of the Games about the scheduling of certain events at certain times of the day and whether or not it was a danger or it was going to be restrictive to the athletes to have the temperatures that we've had. Like, we've certainly seen an increase at some of the events that we've been at of athletes immediately after events putting on ice vests, which are like the life jackets that you get if you were to go out boating, and they're packed full of ice to help them cool down straight away. Even to look at the metro stations and the train stations yesterday, as I made my way from Paris City Centre out towards the La Défense Arena for the swimming, that the timetable screens that tell you which train is approaching had messages along the bottom to remind people about the importance of hydration and the importance of using the water facilities that are available for free nearby. And they've brought in water jet machines at some of the venues. You know, that you might see them at water parks where they kind of fire a jet or a mist of water at you for spectators to cool down as well. So it's definitely something they're conscious of. As with maybe Rio, for us was the extreme, where you went to venues and an awful lot of them didn't have any kind of a canopy or a roofing structure over them, so you are quite exposed at some of the venues. So it is definitely something that there's a big public service announcement messaging around it over the course of the last 24 hours.
So it sounds like there's a lot of lots of mitigation measures there, but like, is there a temperature by which they're like, we pull events, you know, if it hits 40 odd, we're going to have to reschedule? Not great for competitors having to hit a reset and go again, but is there an expectation that you could be looking at rescheduled events if temperatures go very high?
There's no talk of it, to be very honest with you. Now, you do talk about playing a football match. Like, they've moved football around the country to try and bring the games to people or bring the spectacle to people. Like, there are regulations around water breaks in the football matches. I think that the sense around some of the other competitions is that they are bursts of activity. So, you know, the rugby sevens, you play for 7 minutes, you have a break, but within the 7 minutes you've got multiple breaks in play as the clock stops in rugby. You know, we're a little bit away from the very grueling long distance athletic events. A lot of the events are indoors. There's been no suggestion that I've seen so far that we could be in with a situation of certain events needing to be cancelled. The other problem we have, and the reality, as a lot of people will appreciate on you around all of these things, is this is a global event where broadcasters from around the world have scheduled their entire summer schedule around certain events happening at certain times. And when you're in that situation, it's very, very difficult to suddenly start rejigging the logistics around it. And then you factor in that, you know, Ireland has 133 athletes. Just to take Ireland as an example, 133 athletes taking part. They have to leave the village a certain time after their events. Other people move in. Team Ireland have accommodation in the Irish Cultural Centre in the city centre. So it's so many moving parts that unless there is something phenomenal that requires a change to the schedule, the hands are really, really tied.
Finally and briefly, how much of an issue is COVID-19 becoming? We see British swimmer Adam Peaty tested positive for COVID after his silver win. We now, I think this morning, have an Australian competitor that was a medal hope in the women's 1500 metre freestyle has had to withdraw from the event after testing positive.
Yeah, it's starting to bubble and it's starting to emanate from the village. There are no COVID protocols in place in Paris, so there's no suggested usage of masks. There's no asymptomatic testing of athletes. And I think there were 6 confirmed cases in the village yesterday. The Australian swimmer in question has withdrawn from one event to prioritise her favourite event. But, you know, Adam Peaty, the British swimmer, obviously talking about the impact that he felt it had on his performance as well. So there's not a massive story yet, but something that is definitely starting to develop within the village in particular.
Okay, thank you for that rundown on all things Olympics on day 4. Damien O'Mara from RTÉ Sports. You can watch extensive coverage of the 2024 Olympic Games on RTÉ 2 and RTÉ Player throughout the day back after these.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.